Did Tuesday really happen? A little weakness in the market. And what do we talk about? Will the buy the dippers come in again? They came in on Tuesday, red open Wednesday, red to green. We had some weak numbers at 10 o'clock that helped out. But folks, buy the dippers, still here. Have some earnings reports, nothing major. Levi's, people have been buying Levi's lately, I guess. ConAgra, not a Wiley Files stock. We'll talk about that. Special guest, 8:35, Kendrick Perkins, ESPN analyst. He's going to talk about investing in athletes, investing in sports. It's Thursday. It's pre-market prep. Aaron, let's get it started.
Welcome to Benzinga's pre-market prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, team, in the green, 15 handles, 52.81.50, trading near the highs of the session, getting back those losses from Tuesday. The buck in the red, under 104, down 16 cents at 103.83. TLT, I have the TLT up there because I want to see it back above 92. We're down 22 cents at 91.80. Crude, basically flat, 85.37. Gold, over 2300, 2306.60. That's down 840. Silver, we got a new handle. That's the 27 handle. That's flat, 2703. Bitcoin futures, they're just hanging out in the green in the mid 60K handle at 66,805. Let's bring in Triple D. And Triple D, was it a nice, easy after our session, just everything going to according to plan, making some bank, or what happened to you?
No, sleepy session last night, and then all of a sudden around 7:20, I have no idea what happened. You can see it on the chart, though. We just exploded up about 14 handles in about 14 seconds. I'm not sure if it was Fed speak. I actually never did catch what the headline was, but I was scrambling. I got picked off bad there, and then I was scrambling for longs because I went from like nothing to like major short very quickly there. You know, sitting a little, doing a little after hours market making, and boom, we popped really high. Then we kind of gave a lot of it back, like in the next 10, 15 minutes, and then we just slowly started drifting higher here. So it's been a weird session. It was a weird session last night. It was kind of a weird intraday session yesterday. You're getting a little bit of chop. But what is very clear to me, and let's bring AB into this conversation, what is very clear to me is this AI trade is not over. With yesterday's trading action, you know, people were saying, oh, you know, yeah, these stocks are going to all start going down here. You know, NVIDIA's topped out, SMCI. Well, what happened yesterday was a lot of the, you know, the quiet AI trade and some of maybe these other stocks, you know, really started to rip higher. Like, you know, check out VRT. We've talked about this one as an AI trade. 6, 7, 8 days, just leaking a little bit. You're like, oh, you know, this trade's over. And then boom, one day gets it back from 77 to 85, just like that. And, you know, I just think there's going to be like, you know, that's, you know, indicative of what you're, when you're in bull markets and bull trends, is that they leak, and then boom, you know, they get it right back. And I think, you know, you're going to see eventually the same thing in NVIDIA, where you're just going to come in. It's going to be up like 50 or 80 or 100 points. You know why I think NVIDIA is going to be up 50 or 80 or 100 points, Joel, one day? You know why. Yes. Not an earnings report. Why is NVIDIA going to be up 100 points one day? Coming.
Humanoids.
No. You guys are. Come on. The chat's going to know. Why would NVIDIA be up 100 points? There you go.
In a buyback. No.
I don't know about a buyback because they're really innovating in themselves and it's not an NVIDIA thing to do, but I think a stock split's going to come here. I think it's going to rip the face off the bears, and I think that's what's going to push us over $1,000. I'm not sure if that's going to be the high or not, but just keep thinking about it, folks. Like, we're in such early innings here in the AI trade. I don't think the AI trade is over. And if you rewatch, and I rewatched that Cramer interview there when he was interviewing the CEO, obviously, Cramer brought up a buyback, and he's like, we'll think about this. You know, like, he kind of said, that sounds like a darn good idea. You know what? It's been a couple weeks here now. I think it's gonna happen. I think they're gonna split the stock. I think it's gonna be like a, you know, like a 5-for-1 stock split or maybe something more. And then the bears will be like, oh my gosh, we're in a world of hurt. And again, Stock splits don't add any value. It's true, but we know the stocks tend to go higher on
people it. Like it.
Retail involved, like it. People like yep. it. CMG just did it pop from 2,800 to 3,000. It has leaked back, but I think you're going to see a stock split here sooner than later in NVIDIA.
Real quick, before we get to the news and the other stuff, the you talk about moves yesterday. Dennis, I don't know if you were still at your desk, but we've been talking about interest rates, right? And the Fed and saying, what, you know, this, that. You got some weak data at 10 o'clock, and this was this rip right here. Absolutely 10 a.m., man. If your head was not on a swivel, you got absolutely run over. I mean, it was weak data, and boom, they took that and took it all the way back up in a wild session. So we're moving off the interest rate talks. Actually, it was right here. This is where it was yesterday morning. So, man, it's still, they're still talking rate cuts. They're still talking weak data.
Yeah, and we had multiple Feds speak yesterday. You know, obviously, off the hop, I think it was Bostic saying one cut, and that was making the market nervous. But then Powell speaking, what'd Powell say? He say anything? He kind of just stayed the course, right?
Yeah, he didn't say anything to that changed much. Let me see if I can get some of his exact comments from yesterday. Going back to what we were just talking about with VRT, I actually was just talking yesterday with Raznick about, because we were talking about, you know, Raznick always likes to find the derivative plays, the thing behind the thing. And I was like, look, you know, NVIDIA, you've had all the juice kind of squeezed, not all the juice squeezed out, but, you know, everyone's been rushing into NVIDIA, all these chip stocks. But the data infrastructure plays are still attractive. I mean, you have VRT. I was looking at DLR, I believe the ticker is, as well. Digital Realty Trust. That one is a bunch of data centers.
Data centers.
And then also this one, EQIX. This one really hasn't gotten any love. It's only up about 10% over the last year. And it's an AI play too. And like these data center plays pay dividends. There's probably a little bit less risk involved when it comes to the semi names that have already ran up so much. So I was already talking about this yesterday, and I sent my buddies VRT last week. They were asking about like what are some AI plays that haven't been ran that much. And so I still think they're attractive. I'm not saying like go all in on these data center plays, but if you're looking for some sort of an AI exposure that hasn't had a crazy run up like SMCI or NVIDIA, something to look at, these data center plays, I believe.
I just think this trade is far from over. I think sometimes we just need to, and we get caught up, and I very much get caught up in the minutiae of day-to-day activity. But if you just sit back and think, where are we going to be with AI 2 years from now? It's going to be unrecognizable. And who is going to lead that charge? It's going to be NVIDIA. It's going to be a lot of these other companies that we're talking about too. And if you can pick up any of these companies at, you know, 30 times earnings, I think you're doing it all day, because these earnings are going to continue to grow. Whether regardless, and, you know, the chats beat me up for 80 to 100 points on NVIDIA on a split. I tend to agree with you. I may have overshot
estimate. I don't think you did, because what they're failing to realize is, okay, so if you say the normal move is around 5% for a Chipotle or Walmart.
Yeah, usually on an announcement, you get 4 or 5%.
Right, but then you take the hottest, most wanted stock out there and then put a split on it. I think it'd be a little bit higher than 5%. So, and that could come when NVIDIA's at, you know, we're saying where it's at now, but what if it's a little bit higher? What if it's at 1,100? What if it's at 1,200 when they announce the stocks? But I don't think 80 or 100 is that out of the question on a move for the stock split at all, Dennis.
Algos don't care. They'll take it up. Hey, just another one on the infrastructure place. We didn't talk about this one with Tracy when she came on, but she gave us this one a while ago, Sterling Infrastructure. Look at that chart, man. That had the gap and go off the last earnings. Pull back, kind of looks like the NVIDIA, you know, make a high, pull back, look a little bit sleepy. I don't know if this one does a ton of volume. Let me check. Trades a quarter million, 300,000. But that was another infrastructure play that Tracy Radiak gave us quite some time ago.
It's so tough. You know, I can say, oh, this is bearish as they've been, but I don't think those are the stocks you're selling. I mean, even if, you know, interest rates are kicking, and again, with yesterday's trading action, I mean, the TLT makes me very nervous to own stuff like the IWM. It makes me very nervous. And, you know, we tried to bounce back a little bit yesterday, and that's good. The TLT needs to get back up for the IWM. It's why we've rolled over on the IWM to a certain extent. But there's just this underneath demand for stocks here, too, that is just not going away. And, I mean, I feel like, you know, I want to be bearish. I want to raise some cash. You know, we've had multiple guests coming on saying, yeah, we've had an incredible run, and it really has been. I mean, when you give a perspective, what are we talking about? 25% run in the S&P over the last 5 months? I mean, it's a huge run. So, I mean, I want to sell everything and be, you know, bearish, you know, but then I just see the tape and I see action like yesterday, and it's like, man, I get bearish for a day or two.
I know.
And then the bulls just reemerge. So, I mean, from a long-term investing perspective here, I think you just got to be buying stocks on dips, good companies at reasonable valuations, and stocks that, and honestly have overexposure to this AI trade. I don't think it's time to underexpose ourselves. I mean, certain stocks, like, and then there's the commodity trade, inflation trade too. Like, I bought that Alcoa. I mean, about it, and I tweeted it out. I bought $32 5 days ago. It's 37. I mean, holy, that's a move. 5 points on that in just literally 5 days. I didn't expect that quick of a move on Alcoa. Still in it. But
why did you buy
the only
thing,
reason
Dennis?
I bought that is commodities seem to be lifting here. Maybe aluminum starts to get some love. You know, maybe all of a sudden aluminum starts to get some love. Like, we're starting to see commodity inflation across the board. I'm looking for stuff that hasn't gone yet. Alcoa was just sneaky. It was looking at 32, like it was bumping up against resistance and looking like it wants to go. And then, you know, the Ford chart looks very, you know, we had the Ford numbers yesterday. Okay. And that's another one, you know, that, you know, bumping its head.
13.
Boom. You take it out and on good numbers. And then you get the love from Cramer yesterday. They were really giving it love in the morning. They were talking about these numbers, and Phil LeBeau was on there. We love Phil LeBeau on the show. We talk about him all the time when talks to Otto. And he was just saying Ford's, you know, eating, you know, the hybrid, that they're all over this, you know, this hybrid trade. They're all over it too. And you know what? It's lifting here now too. So, I mean, it's hard to like just turn around and say, oh, you know, yeah, this is it. We're turning over because, you know, we got a little bit of a hot inflation down and the Fed's going to kick the can down the road and keep the rates higher for longer. I mean, there's stocks that you would think would go down on that news that are not going down on that news. These sales are significant for Ford. Those were really good numbers yesterday. And along goes Ford. We've liked Ford. We've talked about it on the show. I've been trading it from the long side. I'm not long it now, but I've been in and out just trading it from the long side. It's been, you know, looking like it wants to go here, and here you're in breakout mode. So you get a check back. You usually get a check back, you know, and then you go 13, 14 and back to 13 and a half. It's one you don't have to chase. But on a pullback here, maybe you're chasing Ford.
All right, just to go backward a little bit, Powell, I mean, basically saying the Fed's going to be data dependent, saying the economy is still one of solid growth, strong but rebalancing labor market, inflation moving down to 2%. He's saying there's risk on both sides of their mandate, which is, of course, unemployment and inflation. So yeah, again, nothing like too groundbreaking, but basically saying, hey, we're still going to be data dependent and going meeting to meeting when deciding these next cuts or whether to maintain. Let's go into retail land real quick, because we had a couple big headlines yesterday and overnight. I'll throw it to you guys. You guys want to start with the good or the bad? I guess we're starting with the bad.
Joel decided for us.
All right. So Ulta Beauty, which has been just an absolute monster of a stock, probably the leader in the cosmetic space. You have Ulta and Elf, the two biggest. And Estee Lauder, of course, but that one's kind of been a laggard compared to the other two. Ulta yesterday at the JP Morgan conference said that on the JP Morgan Retail Roundup Investor Conference, issued some weak guidance, basically said that growth has been slowing faster than expected. There are some margin concerns as well. So as good as this company has been doing, they basically came out and kind of dampened some expectations yesterday, said, look, our growth has been slowing. Our margins aren't going to be as good. And I mean, I don't know if like I wouldn't have expected the stock to move down this much on it, but ended up closing down more than 15%. Almost $80 yesterday on this announcement. Just got absolutely hammered, brought down some other names with it, Elf, Estee Lauder as well. So couldn't make up those gains at all.
One thing I will say is you cannot lower guidance or say anything about slowing sales in this market, unless you're Tesla. Unless you're Tesla, it's forgiven. But yeah. There has been multiple cases here. You know, Snowflake earnings were not that great. Cannot get any love at all here. We talked about the Palo Alto trade, you know, off the earnings has leaked it all back here. But, you know, like, this is serious. You know, like, when you get a 100-point fall here, these things typically just don't snap back. And then I look at Ulta Beauty and I think, well, what's the AI trade here? There isn't an AI trade. They can say, oh, yeah, AI, you know, it's going to help us make the makeup better. But everybody will say some type of, you know, like, well, we're related AI somehow. There's no real money being made from AI here. Ulta Beauty, I just think you're staying away when you see a down move like that. At least give it some time to settle, because everybody's natural human tendency, we've said this before, is to go in and buy the weakest stock. You know, what was weak? It's going to bounce right back. And that's where everybody does it wrong, because typically they don't bounce right back. Certain stocks. Now, again, pick your sector. You know, if you've got an AI weakness, you've got, you know, some stocks coming down that are going to be AI plays. Those are probably, the story is probably still hot enough that it's going to bounce it back. We got a makeup company here, you know, like, I don't know. Like, and again, it doesn't trade at a super reasonable valuation either. I mean, it's not crazy. What is the valuation here, AB? You got that?
Yes, sir. It is forward PE of 16, price to sales of 1.9.
That's not bad.
No.
Okay, well, so reasonable. And by the way, I mean, reasonable valuation.
Like, if you've been watching this stock, you know, move higher, make new all-time highs the past 3 years, saying, why, you know, I should get in this. You have a chance now. And I mean, if this thing moves any lower, like, I'm going to buy some of it too, because this industry is huge. I still think there's good growth there. Just because the growth is slowing right now doesn't mean that it's going to be slowing forever, that it's going to, you know, revert to its sales from 10 years ago. I mean, I don't know. I guess I got to go in and see exactly like what the reasons are for that growth slowing. But at the end of the day, I mean, this thing's a monster. It's like the leader in the space. I know a lot of people that shop here. So I think Ulta's a buy if it starts moving lower.
It's been a good stock for a very long time. But I think when you see big down moves like here, it's very important to be more patient than just scoop. I would say if this is an AI stock, maybe you're scooping. I think it's not an AI play. I don't think it turns it around, you know, just like on a dime. I don't think they just rip it right back. And it hasn't been working for the last few days, like a few weeks, just randomly buying the disappointing earnings dip. And this is, you know, what this is, you know, even though, you know, it wasn't on the schedule and it wasn't on
JP
the official
Morgan
earnings announcement.
Conference.
You got guidance.
Yeah. Who's just trading on their phone? Yeah, at a conference. Who's on their phone, like, popping bids in the pre-market.
That's the smart traders. They're getting the hell out of there.
You gotta maybe get back. You get a check back. You got a gap to fill down to 427.80. So see if you get back. I mean, that was a big gap to fill. It held it for several months. So I think if the big boys are going to be re-nibbling in this thing, it might be between the 420 and 430 area. Of course, you know, you get a couple bottoms here in the same area. Maybe get a little bounce trading up $3 in the pre-market. But, man, that was a big move. A lot of people are caught. Elf Beauty. All of a sudden, Elf Beauty, 220, March, 165, 166 right now. Boy, that 160 area looks like good support. And Estee Lauder, EL, man, that's just been the dog of the group, man. That's never revisited, come anywhere near those all-time highs made back in late 21, early 22, and got some monthly resistance too. So let's see. We'll see if we can get a pullback here down to fill that gap in Ulta.
Someone asking about data coming out at 8:30. We do have initial jobless claims in 10 minutes, as well as U.S. trade balance. Let's bring it back to retail now. We got the bad out of the way. Now let's get to the good. Levi's reported earnings last night and strong earnings. You know, I mean, the stock is trading up 12%. I'm going to pull up those numbers exactly. But I had actually been talking about this stock as kind of like an opposite play to this fast fashion that we're seeing with Shein and all these other companies that are shipping basically very cheap material from China and stuff. Levi has done a good job of leaning into being the like environmentally conscious clothing brand that you can buy one good pair of denim and it's gonna, you know, you can keep that for 2 years. It's not as bad for the environment, which people are gonna say, oh my God, you're so woke. And it's like, No, I don't personally like shop based on that stuff, but people do. And that's what I care about is making money. And so when you have all this data that shows that younger people are spending their money in a more, you know, conscientious way, then it makes sense why Levi's wants to lean into this. But they reported EPS at 26 cents, beat 21 cent estimate. Sales came in at 1.55 billion, beat the $1.54 billion estimate. I believe they gave some good guidance as well. Yep, raised 2024 adjusted EPS guidance, and a really good move. I mean, up 40% from the lows back in. Wait, let me pull. My chart's not loading. When were the lows in here? Like October of last year.
Yeah, well, it formed a nut. Yeah, in October it made the ultimate low, but buyers stepped up at 18 big time. You had to move up in a quiet consolidation. This took a nice pop on Levi's here. Went up to 21.35. That's a big move, so keep an eye on that as a potential target on the upside. But for me, when I see this kind of formation on the monthlies, I think if this thing, we're traded 2087, that's up 221. If you establish a bid here, about, you know, at or near this 2050 area, get a little foundation here, then I think you get a move up to just over 22. But here you are at your highest level since early 2022. They're a little frustrating to buy, leave. I went a while ago to look for some jeans there, and they got like 87 versions of like the same pant. And I just was like, it was like, so I'm like, no, I want the pair I bought 10 years ago. And I couldn't find them. But anyways, people are out there buying denim. Let's see if we can hold the 2050 area, take out the pre-market.
Retail is always a tough trade. I mean, you can see pesky trends start from nowhere. And you can see certain stocks like Dillard's or A&F just relentlessly bid for years. And then other retail doesn't go anywhere here. So you somewhat have to just be cautious saying, oh, yeah, retail sucks. I'm just going to sell it, because you picked the wrong stock and you can really get hurt on that. Levi has been doing well. To your point, it's been doing well here for a while. It's a nice earnings report. I think we just got to be careful with, you know, just, you know, blindly chasing these things, though.
Well,
so it's a tough call.
What I think is interesting about playing the retail trade or the retail names is you have these different trends, and if you feel like you have, like, you know, your finger on the pulse of these trends, there's money to be made. And like I said, I mean, we had this whole movement toward fast fashion, people buying, you know, I mean, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Shein, or I mean, even people ordering clothes off Amazon, like people do it all the time now. And it's good because you can get something real cheap. You need to get something for an event, like a shirt for a concert or something, whatever. You get it, it's cheap, but then you like throw it away. You don't wear it that much. And it's real. I mean, the fast fashion industry is one of the most like environmentally, you know, like worst things for the environment. And then you have Levi, the pendulum's kind of swinging the other way now, where Levi's positioning itself and saying like, hey, like if you want to buy clothes that's not bad for the environment, all this stuff, come to us. And on top of that, you mentioned Abercrombie Fitch. There's this whole movement of like old becoming cool again. It's not just Abercrombie and Levi's. You look at like Depop, eBay, all these people are buying.
Look at the gap.
Yeah,
I was going to talk about people buying like actual thrifted clothes too. Like I have so many friends now that are going to buy like a vintage Patagonia jacket, like a 1990s Patagonia ski jacket on eBay. And what's amazing is that like, A, the quality on this stuff is usually like a lot better than what you can buy now in 2024. And B, like it's still pretty cheap. Like you can buy like an old Patagonia jacket for $50. That's like cool. It's different versus going to a store and buying a brand new one for $250. So the whole, you know, vintage resale clothing market, that's back right now. You have Levi's becoming cool again. You have Abercrombie becoming cool again. So that's the trend right now. And it's not going to stay that way forever because all these retail trends tend to, you know, kind of like
they change.
They come and go. They come and go.
Triple D, yeah. Triple D, and I don't know if anybody in the chat is even going to get this, of our veterans. Remember who we used to talk retail with? And I'll give you a hint. It was a female. And one time we were talking about Levi's and jeans or something, and I'll tell you what I mentioned, and she absolutely ripped me. I mentioned something about jean shorts. Do you remember that young lady that we had on? We haven't. I'm going to try and dig her up.
You know my memory. He always throws me under the bus.
Does anyone remember him?
I never get one right. I'm like, oh, for like 10,000.
How about, I don't even know if Jay Rice was around then yet. Kristen Bentz. You remember that name?
You're really throwing me under the bus here, Joel.
Okay,
to finish the story.
Well, anyways, I'm
it's been a long
to...
time ago. Joel's memory, he remembers everything. He's like an elephant, you know, he just doesn't forget. And I'm the goldfish with the 6-second memory here.
Okay.
So we're exact opposite.
All right,
tell
let's
the story.
Go. Even
finish
Jay Rice
story.
Does it. I just looked her up on Twitter. Maybe I'll try and get her on. Okay.
There you
enough
go.
For the fashion
I'm sure
talk.
She was excellent.
Fashion talk is worse than sports.
Well,
I
hold
mean, on.
Last,
on guys.
Last point on it, Joel's or question. Someone in the chat's asking if Speedos are coming back. What do you wear when you swim?
I wear not like, you know, like down like just above the knees.
The jammers. But,
yeah, jammers. I wear jammers.
So, like,
yeah,
are they Speedo brand though?
I think I have
or the
TYR. You know, they outlawed these cheater suits, man. These suits,
we
like
are
you
off
dive
the rails
in
here.
And you're just like floating on top of the water. But no,
we are
anyways,
off the rails.
All right, we
bring
have
us
a couple
back on the rails.
All right, we have a
train
couple other
completely derailed.
We have a couple other headlines and stuff to get to, but I don't
let's
know
do
why.
The Palantir.
Okay.
That's one just broke at 8 o'clock here.
Now you're,
and we
throwing, me under, now you're throwing me under the bus, Dennis.
No, I know, but this is like what's happening here. So Oracle,
okay.
8 o'clock, with- Oracle and Palantir join forces to deliver mission critical AI solutions to government and business.
AI.
So Palantir wanted a headline. You know, it's been leaking, needed a headline. Here you go. Gets, it looks like, you know, some type of, you know, deal here going with Oracle. And obviously, you know, it's popping up substantially on the deal. You know, it'd be probably a nothing burger for Oracle. But, you know, it's a big name. Palantir has been a stock that's been dogging for a while. We've been talking. We bring it back to the AI trade because these are the ones that are going the last couple of days, folks. These stocks want to bounce back. They're waiting for headlines. Palantir just got one. That's why we're up 80 cents here. I wouldn't fade it.
I don't know. I'm going to sound kind of dumb when I say this because I still I know what Palantir does, but I don't really, I guess.
No, none of us really do.
None of us really know. They don't sound dumb. the way they work with like the governments and do all this stuff and they're tracking us, it seems kind of shady. But outside of that, if I wanted to go out and buy an AI play today, and I know, Reno, Palantir is a very popular stock among retail traders. So someone in the chat may try to sell me on this. But give me a reason why I should buy Palantir at a 69 forward PE and a 23 price to sales when I can buy NVIDIA at a 36 forward PE and about the same price to sales.
It's the market cap that scared me away on this one. And I've been in this name. I've been out in and out of this name trading it, but haven't made it. It hasn't really made its way into my long-term portfolio for the simple reasons that those metrics scare me. But also the market cap, $50 billion is like a huge company. And like, I don't really know what
they
do.
They announced,
I don't really know what they do.
The company announced like a $200 million government contract like a month ago, and the stock went up like $2 billion in market cap. And it's like, okay,
it's a cult stock. It has a big following, got a little topsy turvy. I gave y'all a number a long time ago when it had this big pop up to 27, and it was not a daily. It got to go to the monthly sometimes. You had a pair of highs back in October, November of 21 at the $27 area, little check back. I'm looking, it's not back at its 4-day high here. I mean, it's climbing. But let's see what happens. I'd say next target on the upside, 24, 26 was your 4-day high if you're looking for another target on the upside. But you're right. They needed a headline. They get
ripping,
the headline. The
ripping,
headline has
ripping.
AI. Yep, AI has AI in it. And throw Oracle in there a little bit, right? I mean, you know, nothing wrong with being associated with Oracle, right? So there you go.
No, and that's what I wanted. Jobless claims just coming out here right
now.
I just went wide in time. I had a couple people in the chat. Thank you.
I just went
wide just in the nick of times. 221,000 versus 214,000 is what I'm seeing on a preliminary number here.
Yep, 221 versus 213.
So slightly higher. I don't think it's going to move the needle.
Yeah, I mean, again, like I think almost for the market right now, you'd probably want it to come in a little higher than a little cooler because that, you know, I mean,
yeah,
I just think you're in this
hot labor market.
I just think you're in this spot where you're when we're looking for this data, you want something that's not too extreme to either side, because if it's, you know, if it was way lower, then people are going to say the labor market's so hot, the Fed doesn't need to cut. If it's way higher, people are going to say, okay, this is maybe the, I don't want to say recession, but this is the slowdown that we've been looking for, where maybe the Fed can orchestrate it to where, you know, there's a little bit of balancing in the labor market that helps bring inflation down without having all the negative impacts that would be associated with like a drastic increase in unemployment right now. So I think that's actually a pretty good number, 221 versus 213. It's showing
bonds aren't moving off it. TLT's not moving off it.
TLT says no thank you. TLT's been saying no thank you to everything. This is what spooked me. This is what continues to spook me, is the continued leak. I'm long TLT. It's the continued leak in this that spooks me from going like all in. But again, the AI trade don't care about TLT. It's IWM that cares about TLT. It's, mm-hmm. you know, the banks that care about TLT, the regionals especially. It's, you know, a lot, you know, of interest rate sensitive. Like we talked solar. There's certain sectors that care about TLT. AI doesn't care about TLT. TLT can continue to leak. AI can continue to win in that environment. The other stocks can't. So you just got to be careful, blindly chasing. I wouldn't say I'm going all in on small caps until I see a recovery in the TLT, and it keeps leaking.
It's not there.
Man, I'm beating myself up big time over here. I don't know why I just looked at this stock, but I saw it. You guys, we talked about it probably a week ago, maybe two. Look at this monthly move in Southern Copper, SCCO. I mean, this is insane. When is a copper stock, like a commodity stock, this thing's not supposed to move like this. It's up 40% in the last month.
No, commodities are inflating again. This is the problem. Like, it's
I know.
Inflation.
What mixed
We're seeing
signals.
Commodity inflation across the board
Look
here.
At this. I know.
This
I
has
know.
Got it. Like, you can't just start. See, this is what started the problem in the first place. Oil started taking off. I mean, you know, we've got commodity inflation here happening. It's why I bought Alcoa. I'm like, it's aluminum. When's aluminum going to start going? Probably. I mean, so think about chat. Here's homework for you. What's the commodities that haven't gone yet? Go look for the laggard commodity trade, because you know what? Aluminum, that Alcoa trade's working really well.
It certainly ain't cocoa.
It ain't cocoa. No, cocoa, I know it's just exploded.
Yeah, we'll check back in cocoa there, though. It got
all right. Put a little
I'm not calling the top. It just got over $10,000. If you want commodities that haven't gone, I'll give you sugar. Sugar is looking sweet down here. I mean, it's had overall on the monthlies, it's had a pullback. What about the wild child coffee? How's coffee doing? Oh, coffee.
That's
Yep. What are the other commodities? Let's look at the grains. Oh man, we're not gonna have any grain. We're not gonna have any wheat because of the war in Russia. Wrong. War in the Ukraine. Wheat. Let's just take a look. Corn, pullback here in corn, still trading in fractions. Maybe go back to that. Beans or beans in the teens? Not in the teens, under $12 a bushel. But benign data, Dennis. We're just floating up here, just off the highs of the pre-market session, up 20 handles here at 52.86.50. So, bonds not reacting that great, but equity buyers still out there.
It's more like with the commodity trade. It doesn't appear. I guess cocoa has went, but it doesn't appear to be all just food. But I mean, we've seen a significant rally, obviously in oil. We've seen a significant rally. You know, you said in copper. It looks like aluminum starting to pick it up again too. Is there an aluminum? Like, is there a ticker for aluminum? Under the bus here. It's not that I don't look at. I just look at Alcoa. Hard to get.
Well, there's the Aluminum Strategic Fund, trade by appointment only. That's
looks too thin to even get any information off of that.
Yeah. Man, I don't know. I don't know.
I just see Freeport MacMoran blasting off here every day here now, too. FCX in the last, 2 weeks. Look at this one, 38 FCX to $49.
Copper play, too. I mean, I'm beating myself up. They did shout out. They do a great podcast over at Bloomberg Odd Lots. It's Joe Weisenthal and Tracy Alloway. And they did a copper episode like a year and a half ago talking about how basically the demand for copper worldwide was set to like tenfold over the next 20 years. And I showed my stats where I bought Southern Copper at like a year and a half ago and ended up selling it 2 days later for a loss. And now it'd be up 100%. And I mean, if you're looking at like at
why would you sell something 2 days later, AB?
Well,
this is what I do. He listens to me too much. I'm in and out.
Because I'll buy something, and then like 2 days later, like some little bill will pop up, and I'll be like, oh man, I need to raise some cash, and then I'll go sell. You know, like my finances.
I have that problem too.
My finances are always in fluctuation, but either way, I mean, it's like I'm seeing right now that part of the reason for the increase in prices in copper is not just increased demand, which that's good news for the global economy, right? You have Dr. Copper help you diagnose the health of the economy. If copper is doing well, typically it's a good sign because it goes into everything from construction to electronics to now EVs, etc. But also supply chain issues, which I didn't know we were still dealing with supply chain issues. I thought, you know, COVID passed, we're done with that, but I guess they're not mining enough. So some of these mining companies could be interesting. But I, again, like they called this basically on that Odd Lots podcast a year and a half ago, kicking myself again for making that trade and selling. But if you guys have some good miners, some things to check out there, let me know in the chat and I'll do it.
We are starting to go higher here. They're starting to bounce us back. It looked like a nothing burger, and now they decide, no, it's not a nothing burger, it's a something burger, and they are ripping higher. TLT again, not moving, not really moving off of it. IWM has come up substantially here. We've ripped about 5-6 handles on the S&P since the numbers, so they are buying it. The little hot number, they're like, ooh, jobs cooling a little bit. Fed, 3 interest rate cuts, Powell, 3, please, 3.
I mean, I said it, and people in the chat were saying it as well, that the, you know, kind of like, it seemed like a sweet spot, like Goldilocks, just right. Not too bad on either side, so I'm not surprised to see the market responding well to that. Someone else, we were just talking about data centers. Oh, Carmen said, yeah, I read an article where data centers are switching to copper for short distance cables. Like, so copper's an AI play now, guys. I mean, you know, so
there you go.
Let's move off copper though, because we've spent probably 10, you know, too much time talking about copper.
But what's been moving has been commodities. In the last month, this has been the trade. You know, certain commodities, obviously we looked through not all of them, but there has been big moves in some commodities.
Let's talk some Google, because Google, speaking of AI, was kind of your like AI dog for a while. I mean, the stock got hammered.
Yeah.
After they released the Bard, it was seen as not as good compared to ChatGPT, all this stuff. And then people said, hold on, wait a minute. Maybe Google will be an AI play. And then the stock came back, hit new all-time highs the other day. You had a headline after the close yesterday. Let me go ahead and pull that up. Alphabet stock initially jumps as Google considers charging for AI search. So, you know, trying to bring in some extra money from the AI, but then the market decided, man, maybe not. This isn't great news. And now it's trading lower. At the end of the day, maybe Google's not the leader right now, but it obviously is in AI play. So, you know, I mean, Google all-time highs the other day, probably, I don't know. Cause are we looking a little double toppy?
Separating itself from Apple in the last month, because they had the Magnificent Seven all separating. It was Tesla was garbage, Google was garbage, and Apple was garbage. We can't stop buying Nvidia, and we love Microsoft still. And you know, Amazon has been, and Meta were still getting love. They were separating of 4 versus 3. Well, Google has got back into the good books now of the market here, and they are seeing it as an AI play, and it did pop substantially on that headline last night, but then turned around and went red on it. So I'm not sure what that was all about. Market liked it, then they didn't like it. Woo. But you know, so far, you know, that, like, obviously I would say beginning of the year, this is definitely out of favor. It's back in the favor here. The technicals are telling you it's back in the favor. I still am scared of Google, because I still think, you know, AI is coming for a chunk of that search. And I'm not sure they're going to lose some market share there. So I'm still just scared that the AI may come in here and actually take some of the search away, whether it's a ChatGPT product or something else. And that's still the core piece of Google's revenue. Obviously, Google is very diversified, lots of other businesses there. But, you know, you wouldn't want to see, they got a monopoly on search. You wouldn't want to see that monopoly broken.
A big pop to 160 on a huge, huge volume. Nice round number at 160. Now you've had the check back. So you're red on the session, but I'll give you a longer term number here. And that's going to be 156.50. That was your all-time closing high on the day that it made its current all-time high, I guess, if you don't close the pre-market at 157. And then you you closed right at that area yesterday. So the best mark possible ever, 156.50, down to $1.05. That'll be a interesting level to keep an eye on. Perhaps it's today's session, really not rallying with the S&Ps as we are coming up just like this, Monday's high. That's your next target on the upside. That comes in at 52.96. Nothing in there in the 90 handle so far for the S&Ps.
So I did notice on Google the other day, I could share my screen. I Googled, and I assume this is done with some form of AI. I Googled how much is Intel spending on, how much is Intel spending on chip making in the U.S.? And this popped up on the top of Google, which this isn't new that Google, you know, will give you the answer to a question up top without you having to click on the article. But this came from an article one day ago that it pulled it from this Reuters article. So I assume that's done with some form of AI, like no humans going in there and writing this blurb from the Reuters article. And like, that's, I mean, that's significant because if you can start Googling stuff and getting an answer pulled from a recent article using AI and you don't even have to click on the article, like that makes my job a lot easier that I don't have to go click into this article. Because a lot of times, like, you know, if you search something and you see a headline with the question you're looking for, it'll be like buried deep in the article and you got to read and find it. So I thought this was pretty cool because I was like, oh, it's right here. Intel plans to spend $100 billion on building or expanding chip factories in 4 U.S. states. Didn't have to go through the whole article. So like that to me is a significant, increase in the value of Google search. So people talk about ChatGPT replacing Google, this and that. But if Google continues to make their search more valuable through things like this, then their monopoly on search, like they might have a stronghold on it for a little bit longer.
Yeah, well, that's what they got to do, is they got to keep evolving here to a certain extent. Or you're right, you know, people are going to come with these chatbots and just be asking them the question and not bothering to go to Google. So you need to be able to just ask Google a question and it gives you a straight up answer without taking you through all these, you know, sponsored links. So with you there, AB, and maybe they are, you know, obviously, you know, improving the product, and they're going to have to continue.
And they got to be using some form of AI for that, right? I mean, no, they're not going through that Reuters article. A human is.
Well, I think it's going to continue to improve the Google experience. Oh, yeah. I mean, AI, don't think about Google. They are definitely an AI play. I'm just concerned that they have such a monopoly that, you know, that the offset, you know, from their AI revenues could be hurt if they start losing that monopoly. You know, I don't know if they're going to make more money. You know, so obviously they're an AI play. Maybe long term you're fine with Google as well. Valuation's always been more reasonable than a lot of these other stocks. So although, you know, you're seeing separation here, like the valuations where Microsoft was 29 times and Apple was 29 times, you know, now you're starting to see complete separation here where Microsoft's up at like 37 times earnings now and Apple's down to like 25 times because the stock prices have just went in opposite direction. So sometimes that stuff fixes itself. But KR, you know, you look here, you know, Google, its valuation's always been, you know, less than Apple and Microsoft. So they've always kind of put that, you know, discount for whatever reason on Google. And they don't see them as strong a performer as Microsoft. So they do see Microsoft as a threat, or Microsoft wouldn't be trading 37 times and Google trading 21 times.
All right, guys, it is 8:44. We're going to do something a little different with our guest interview today. This is a pre-recorded interview that Joel and I did last week. Very fun interview. We got to speak to Kendrick Perkins, former NBA champion and ESPN analyst. Kendrick Perkins is working with a cool NIL company called Nilly. So if you're interested in sports, the investing in sports, how you can, invest in this growing industry of NIL, you got to check out this interview. Joel, anything else you want to say before I pop it up?
No, fun guy. And listen to him. Very, very interesting story. And, future of sports here. If you're investing, you like sports, this Nilly may be for you. Nilly.us. Hello, Conan and Aaron Bree here from Pre-Market Prep. We got a special guest here from ESPN sports analyst Kendrick Perkins. You all know him from the NBA. Kendrick, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. I appreciate y'all having me.
Okay. You also have another role. You're an investor and ambassador for a new program, Nilly. To help student athletes. So we just wanted to talk about your involvement in that today and I'll just start out. Like as a youngster, before I get to that, I just want a background question. As a youngster, did you have like a favorite NBA player that you kind of modeled your game after?
Well, I had a few. You know, I grew up in Beaumont, Texas, so I was always a big Hakeem Olajuwon fan with the Houston Rockets, Clutch City, back-to-back champions, you know. But I never could really turn the corner of actually getting the dream shake and the wiggle. So, you know, I tried to translate over to Shaq in high school. They used to call me Baby Shaq. Obviously, he went to San Antonio Cole down there in San Antonio. So, I mixed it up. One day I would be Patrick Ewing. One day I would be KG. It was dependent on the mood. You know what I mean? The mood.
Kendrick, big fan here. Thanks again for joining us. And by the way, Hakeem's university is doing pretty well too. Still in March Madness. Got that overtime win. Overtime win against A&M last night. Speaking of college, how early or how young were you when you knew you wanted to forego college and go straight to the NBA, straight out of high school?
My 10th grade year is when I went to the ABCD camp and I got put on the radar. And then at that time, you know, we didn't have Mac computers and all that. So, you know, I used to go to the local library and look at the mock draft every day to see, you know, where I was ranked in the mock draft. And when I started seeing my sophomore year of high school, NBA scouts come down to Beaumont, Texas, I knew it was a real thing. And the motivation behind that was that, you know, my mom was shot and killed when I was 5 years old. My grandparents raised me. My grandmother made $60 a week. Grandfather made $300 a month. And we grew up without a lot. And I tell this story so many times. I don't know if you guys heard it, but, you know, my first time going to AAU trip, I went with a roll of pennies, you know, of $20. So I could relate, you know, when it comes to Nilly, when, you know, my guy, the CEO, Chris Ricciardi, came about and brought this opportunity to me, because there's so many of these young athletes that are going through the similar situation, you know, and right now it's becoming a time where it's expensive. You know, they're traveling a lot, the camps. And, you know, you just want to have that financial security and that peace, not only for you, but your family as well.
Back then, you didn't have the access to something like Nilly, right?
Correct.
To assist you, you had to do the homework on your own, going to the library, checking things out. Did you have anybody that you consulted with? I mean, you know, now agents would be all over you from the seventh or eighth grade. Did you have anybody you could consult with?
Yeah, absolutely. My high school coach, Andre Butte, congratulations to him. He just retired, but a Hall of Fame coach in Texas. He stepped in as a huge father figure in my life, and he directed a lot of traffic when it came down to, you know, visiting colleges, going to camps, you know, making the right decision and also sacrificing. He was the one that gave me the advice. He the one that steered me in the right direction. And he also played a huge part in keeping the others away from me. You know, it's a lot of vultures out there that are looking for a come up to attack these young men, you know, any way they know how. And if that's doing something with them with the intent of having a hidden agenda later on down the line, they're out there. And, you know, again, going back to Nilly, it weeds all of this out.
Were you ever worried? I mean, you talked about when you were in the 10th grade, 15 or 16, you start seeing your name in those mock drafts. Were you ever worried that basketball was maybe not going to work out? Did you have a backup plan at all?
No, it was either I was making it to the NBA or I was going to fail in life. After I left ABCD camp, I was actually ranked number one for about 4 months in front ahead of LeBron James. And then he caught up with me. And I was ranked always top five in the country. So it was always the NBA. Like, right. Once I saw that, it was never a second option. It had to work out. I was going to force it to work out. And I did it. I cried myself to sleep so many nights. I separated myself from so many high school events. I sacrificed so much. And so it was that or nothing.
College sports just becoming more and more like professional sports in a lot of different ways. Do you see that trend continuing?
Yes, and it should. You know why? Because think about this for a second, Joel. Last year, they made right around, $16 billion off of sports in college. You know how much the athlete got? Zero. My point exactly. So, you know, if you're having that much money and these athletes are creating that much wealth for these universities, why they can't get none? And I would love, and it's going to continue to grow. Look, we're in the new. It's all about adjusting. It's all about accepting things. Now, you could be a part of it or you can't, but you're going to be left behind, even when it comes to kneeling. And right before this, you know, earlier today, I was on the phone with a parent and the kid, just, you know, explaining to them what the kneeling was all about, explaining to them how the process worked. And they was like, where do I need to sign up?
So what advice would you give to athletes, you know, maybe heading into their college career, focused on making it to the pros, and athletes that are considering joining Nilly?
Well, I would tell them, get a head start in life. Get a peace of mind, right? And getting a peace of mind is being having financial security. And you can't trust what, you know, in this world today, you know, usually in the old school, you could trust a person's word. But in today's game, you can't trust anybody's word, right? If it's not on paper, then they don't have to do it. But at the end of the day, if you have a golden opportunity like Nilly, you know, it's not your typical student loan. And if you get injured, you know, you don't have to pay it back. If you don't make NIL money, you don't have to pay it back. I mean, all you have to do is go and perform. And you're paying it back while still making money at the same time.
All right, one final thing for you. I know you were an enforcer in the NBA, right? You had your style. But what would have happened if you would have been around when the Bad Boys were around? 1989, man. Rick Warren, Bill Laimbeer. How would you have done against them, KP?
You know what? Let me tell you this, Jay. I just had this argument with Stephen A. Smith about, I want to say, 3 weeks ago. And I was telling him, I understand the Bad Boys Pistons. I understand Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars. I understand they were some Rough Riders. But the most dangerous team was the 2004 Pistons. Rasheed Wallace, Chauncey Billups. That was arguably the greatest defensive team in NBA history. I would have had more problems with them, whole and healthy, than I would have had more problems with the old Bad Boys. And there's no disrespect. I'm just saying. Maybe I'm being a little biased because I actually seen it and was old enough to realize what the hell was going on. You know, I'm an 84 baby, okay? I was born in 84. So, you know, even when I was watching the Bad Boys Pistons, I still didn't understand what was going on.
On the line with Kedrick Perkins, TV analyst, NBA analyst for ESPN, talking about Nilly. And it's a way for student athletes to participate in their earnings power before they get to, or when they get to college and when they get to the NBA. Really important. You guys should check out Nilly, nilly.us, for investors and for young athletes. A great opportunity. So not just the networks, the universities, and the NCAA can make money, but the student athletes can as well.
Thank you, Joel, for letting me hang out. This interview was awesome to chat with a guy that I grew up watching play on TV. Never thought, you know, if you could go back in time, tell 13, 14-year-old Aaron you'd be talking to Kendrick Perkins one day. I'd be pretty psyched up about that. So thank you again, Joel. Thank you, Kendrick and the Nilly team. Go check them out.
All righty, that was
That was fun.
Pretty cool. I mean, a little.
I'm actually surprised by his answer to the Bad Boys. I mean, we think about the Bad Boys, but that 2004 team was really good too. Like, I mean, they started that year like 35-4 or something. Like, I remember watching, and you know, just glued. Like, they were awesome. So I mean, and you know, they're very underrated team because you think of the Pistons, you always think about the back-to-back Bad Boys. I mean, that's what you think about. But you know, that 2004 team, Joel, That was good, yeah. You know. Ball don't lie. Ball don't lie. Who said that? Remember that? Ball don't lie.
Yeah, man. And they would have won two in a row if Rip Hamilton wouldn't have pulled up. Tayshaun was coming down the middle. I can remember that was the year they could have won two in a row. But anyways, S&P still ripping. Back to the markets. Yeah. Yeah. Relentless bid in this
relentless
market. We're above Monday's high.
TLT no ripping now too. They'd start buying TLT too. It's like the market led the TLT. You rarely see that one happen, but that's what looks like it just happened here. I mean, I said a few days ago, you know, I'm turning bearish here. I think, you know, we got to start being cautious. And it's just in your face. It's like when you turn bearish in this market, you're just wrong. It seems like almost instantaneously. And again, you know, maybe we're going to leak here, but this market, like, we're down to possibly one interest rate cut this year. We're down to possibly one. Like, let's talk about the math of inflation. And you know, the market's taking it in stride again. Like, it just can't stop. Like, you would think that, you know, the TLT sell-off and, you know, the talks of, you know, maybe going from 3 to 1, you know, from Boston comments yesterday would be like, oh my gosh, you know, we need lower rates.
Don't care.
Nope, the market don't care. The market don't care. And price don't lie. We always used to say that from Rasheed Wallace. Price don't lie. Ball don't lie. Price don't lie. So, I mean, you're bearish. It's hard to argue with what's happening here today. I don't know. I'd like to say, oh, maybe we fade this rally here, but I don't think you do.
Where's young AB?
He left us.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's gone. I don't know what happened. He's gone.
Let's see.
I'm back. He's
hiding out in the background.
Something just happened. I had to refresh my...
Bailed.
All right, real quick, let me try to clean up, see if we had any headlines we didn't get to. Square, let's go to Square, Block, whatever you want to call it. Dennis, I know you know what's going on with this.
I'm getting hammered on it.
There was a downgrade from Morgan Stanley, downgrade Block to underweight. Wait, I thought you said it was a sell. I'm seeing downgrade to underweight.
Underweight is a sell. Lower. So some brokerages, just for clarification for everyone, some brokers do not use the sell word even at all in their notes. They use underweight. So, you know, there's some that say actual sell. Morgan Stanley is one that doesn't say sell. It says underweight. Underweight is a sell.
I was under the impression sell was below underweight.
No, there's a couple brokers that do that too, though. They'll go sell and strong sells. No, typically it's overweight, underweight, and neutral at a lot of these brokers. And then it's buy, hold, sell. So, I mean, that's where a lot of the main ones are. So, underweight is a sell.
So, they went from... I guess neutral to underweight, I believe. Or no, yeah, it went from equal weight to underweight. Lowers price target from $62 to $60. You had some kind of battling analysts this morning, though, because Benchmark came out and said, no, it's a buy, and raised the price target to $99. So you have a really wide spread on different analyst ratings and price targets this morning from $60 to $99. Either way, Square, obviously the market's saying we care more about Morgan's rating than Benchmark. Stock trading down about 3% as we head into trading today. But, I mean, do you got any thoughts here? Any technicals?
It's really technically this is kind of in no man's land. I will say it's a rating, you know, so see if you get the effect. You've had the effect to follow through. 76.40. I mean, you're in absolute no man's land here. There's pretty good support down in the $75 area, the gap area. Doesn't feel like it's going to be getting there, but if you know, if you're following Morgan Stanley's lead, you want to see it get back down, take out that pre-market low, and hold towards the $75 area. PayPal just kind of has a mind of its own here, really affected by it.
They've kind of separated here, PayPal and Square. They're just not moving together nearly as much as they were. We used to be PayPal versus Square, and which one's going to go to 25 first and all the fun stuff. And Square has kind of, but no, PayPal sneaking. Like at one point in time, the gap almost got to 20 points again. So, I mean, they're starting to close the gap. PayPal's starting to close the gap, but these two stocks just aren't really moving together like they used to.
All right. Other headline we didn't really get to today. Apple had some, you know, Bloomberg came out with a report about Apple working on home robotics. I mean, Apple, I guess, is looking for like the next big thing after the EV didn't work out, after the Apple car fizzled out. I mean, I think it's like, obviously, we talked about this with the humanoids and Tesla. I think it's too early to get really excited about these robots. And with something like Apple, typically Apple is usually pretty, secretive when it comes to its new products, things they're working on until it's like ready to go and they want to announce it. So again, I wouldn't be going out and buying Apple because of the robotics news. I might be going out and buying Apple for other reasons, just because it's kind of still been a little bit beaten down compared to the other big tech names. But robotics, it seems like, once you have the biggest company in the world or one of the biggest companies in the world and Apple talking about it, it's a legit thing that's coming. And, we'll probably see more and more headlines from companies like Apple about robotics in the coming years and months.
I think everybody's going to get into robotics, and the humanoid trade is going to be across the board. There's going to be a lot of different plays out there. We've talked about Tesla's a humanoid play, but I mean, there's so many other companies that are getting involved here as well. I mean, humanoids are coming. It's going to be a huge industry. Some people like Chris Camille are saying it's going to be one of the biggest industry this world has ever seen. I think it could be too. I think there's going to be a lot of different ways to play it. I think Apple is so early in this and so far behind. The problem with Apple is just behind on everything, it appears. And maybe they're just going to come out with something and they're so secretive that they're working on stuff behind the scenes and we're just not even getting a sniff of it. But it seems like, they worked on that car for years and then they just aborted. It seems like they're trying to find their way. And I'm going to say it again with Apple is they have been missing that Steve Jobs innovation. Really, when we think about what have they come out with since Steve Jobs, they've just improved products. There hasn't been this game-changing new product. And, Apple was Steve Jobs. He made this company what it is. And, again, the share price is increased a lot since Steve Jobs has left. But it was all multiple expansion and iPhone. I mean, it was all building off of what Steve Jobs had left them. Well, he's gone, and he's been gone a long time now. His innovation is gone here, and I feel like that's what they're missing. Do you think, if Steve Jobs was still alive today, and I'll throw it to you, AB, and Joel looks like he's left, but I could throw it to Joel, too, now, because he's there. I think if Steve Jobs was still alive here today, that Apple would be leading the charge on AI. I think they would be right up there as, boom, one of the leaders, if not the leader. But he's not. He's not here anymore. And, AI was long, is a long ways after. I think this company, honestly, it's not innovative like it was under Steve Jobs.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Jobs had that, Elon Musk-esque thing to him where he was
really
visionary. And, when he got, married on something, he was, gonna make it happen and do it. And, so who's to say, maybe he would have been, trying to do something else, not even with AI. And that's what he was driving toward.
People
sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say he was such a workhorse, AB, right. Too, just to build on this, Musk is a work. What separates, a person who's super successful, like an Elon Musk, or like a Steve Jobs from the rest of us? It's one, they're very smart, very intelligent, but two, it's just motivation and this, workhorse, and not that we're all supposed to be that, the world's, somewhat, going to be, if you're just that much into what you're doing. But, think about what Elon Musk says, he worked 16-hour days, took 3 days off last year. We're all used to, taking off 150 days a year, 250 days, people want a 4-day work week and 3 days off. He said he took 3 days off last year. I believe him. Steve Jobs, and I had a friend that actually worked and, had direct, he was saying that Steve Jobs was just, about work and that was it. You tried to small talk Steve Jobs on the job, he would cut the small talk and say, let's get back to what focus on hand. He never wanted, how was your weekend? It was good. Now let's talk about work. I mean, that's the way he was. And that is why Apple became the powerhouse that it really did. I mean, I don't know if you should run every company like that always, but he was a workhorse and he was 100% about the work and that was it. And when you get those kind of leaders, those companies just take off. That's why Elon Musk, like him or hate him from what he does on social media, you cannot argue with the accomplishments from PayPal to SpaceX to, obviously Tesla and everything he's done here now. Now he's working on humanoids. The accomplishments are just absolutely incredible here. And again, Steve Jobs, same thing. I mean, he created Windows and it all got stolen. They come in there and that's controversial. But I mean, at the same time, his innovation was just incredible. And going back to that, you just haven't had the innovation as Apple since Steve Jobs has been gone.
All right. Wow. That was calling Tim Cook a slacker there, but that's okay.
He's definitely not as innovative. I'll say right now, Tim Cook, not as innovative as Steve Jobs. Well,
I think
not Cook, even in the realm.
I think Cook is just more of a businessman, and he's good at running the business
sure.
as what it is. And he does a really good job, you know, making sure shareholders are happy, this and that. But does he have that same like visionary aspect?
Yeah.
And to your point, Dennis, probably like workhorse mentality that Jobs does. I mean, I've read the Walter Isaacson biography of Steve Jobs, which is a great book. And Isaacson wrote one on Elon Musk that came out last year. And a lot of biographies, you know, they're very like, oh my God, this guy was amazing, you know, this and that. And like, they talk about how amazing Jobs was, but also the downsides to that workhorse mentality that like most people who worked for him thought he was an asshole, and like his own family ended up like not liking him. So it's like there's sacrifices involved with that. It's not like, you know, Steve Jobs was just, oh my God, the best guy ever. This, you know, deserves all the, like, he deserves praise for what he was good at. And then the book was very objective and where maybe he like lacked in other areas in his personal life. So it was a very interesting book. And I'm curious if Isaacson's book on Elon Musk is similar, because other things I've read about Elon Musk, like the Ashley Vance book, is like very just praiseworthy the whole way through. And I'm like, all right, let's be, you know, we got to be a little objective here. Let's be real. But all right, we're going way long here.
It's probably a tough family life for Musk. I mean, how many kids does Musk have?
Like 12.
Yeah. And he's working 16-hour days. When's he seeing his kids? I mean, he's sacrificed everything. But if you're a shareholder, that's what you want. You don't care that, you know, maybe he doesn't have the time for his family as much. You want the workhorse CEO. I mean, those are the best companies to invest in. That's why Tesla has been unbelievable what they accomplished. You know, from making cars in the tent to where he is now is incredible. From what he's done, he basically took the whole, you know, SpaceX basically is NASA to a certain extent, you know, like he's taken a lot of things that NASA was doing and made them all better. I mean, it's honestly, his accomplishments are incredible. And again, that comes with what you were saying, AB, is the family life. I mean, I like my family, Joel, you like your family, obviously. AB, one day, you know, you probably have kids and stuff too. It's a big focus of my life. I'm not looking to take over the world. I'm not looking to change the whole world here. I'm looking just to have a good life, and I want to really enjoy my kids, and I love my kids. And I'm not saying he doesn't love his kids, but when you work 16-hour days, you have a lot less time for your kids.
Final technical note here, just great. I mean, Apple came down and held where it should, that 168.50 area. You got four lows in that area, so if you're leaning on it for a swing trade, keep an eye on that. And then your next target on the upside be your three-day high at 171.25. That's certainly not too far away here for Apple.
All right. Tomorrow we got some jobs data today. Tomorrow will be an even bigger morning with jobs data and on-farm payrolls coming up. Joel, who do we got talking to us?
We're going to talk IPOs. I think it's a good time. I know DJT is not an IPO, but it's a SPAC. We're going to have Eric Kroll on, and he's going to talk to us about the Reddit trade and the recent price action in these IPOs. So looking forward to that. The jobs number should be a lot of fun. And Triple D, I'll be seeing you virtually later. There'll be no closing print today. I'm heading over the border to Canada. Dennis and I are going to be speaking at the University of Windsor, their investment club. And, man, they got some spreadsheets, some Excel stuff they're going to be sharing with us.
It's going to be fun. Yeah,
we put together a great presentation for that. So no closing print today, folks, but we'll be back with you tomorrow morning.
All right, well, good luck, guys, with that. Sounds fun. Make sure to come back tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Again, there should be some fireworks with that labor data. We'll see you guys there. Be there. Smash the like if you haven't already. And we do have live trading starting up right after this.